Welcome to Not Enough Champagne, a podcast suffering from a massive electoral-based hangover. My name's Corey Hazelhurst, and my partner in propaganda is Steve Haynes.
Hey, Corey.
Can you please not talk that loud, Steve, actually, because I'm suffering from a very delicate condition at the moment.
Well, that's your own fault.
To be fair, it's a hangover based on the fact that we were yesterday celebrating Labour's triumphant victory in the Sturgely ward and in Bournville as well. Well done to Fred Grindrod, you might have heard on the podcast. Him and Liz Clements are Bournville's new Labour councillors, which is exciting. And we are feeling very happy, triumphant, also feeling slightly sick. Now, I'm suffering from an election-based hangover, and I'll tell you, Steve, who else is suffering from an election-based hangover, and that's British politics since the Brexit referendum 2 years ago. There were local elections on Thursday. We're going to look at how the parties are spinning those results, and we're going to look at how accurate or not that spin actually is. I'm shocked, Steve, and I'm shocked that it seems that for a lot of politicians, for a lot of activists, for a lot of commentators, what these results really are proving is that these election results confirm what these people already knew.
I know, whoever would have thought that might be the case?
It's almost like confirmation bias is a thing.
I know.
I'll tell you someone who is neither afflicted by confirmation bias or self-doubt. That's Jacob Rees-Mogg. And he has said that the Conservatives' result shows that there's no margin in pursuing a soggy Brexit. Not really sure what a soggy Brexit is. Boris Johnson said that a key reason for the Conservatives' success in the local elections was their pledge on the EU customs union, which makes no sense. Theresa May said that the night was a strong night for the Conservatives. Essentially, their line is, a good night shows they're in a good position, shows that the voters are behind them, and it vindicates their particular version of Brexit. How accurate do we find their assessment?
Okay, so there's two things to take into there. One is the claim that it was a good night for the Conservatives, and the other is the claims around Brexit itself, and you know whether or not this vindicates a certain stance towards the negotiations. On Theresa May's statements that this was actually a good night for the Conservatives, what planet are you on? This was not a good night for the Conservatives overall. What the results of this election, local elections, have shown us is that we are in the same position we were previously. Labour is not making signs of making gains anywhere outside of metropolitan areas and big cities. The Tories aren't able to break into those areas and are still just consolidating their power bases within the suburban and rural areas. Ultimately, the results of these local elections is a big shrug and kind of going, oh no, we're where we were last year. So to say that this was a good night for the Tories is a massive overstatement. The thing is, the Tories have been very effective at playing down expectations during this kind of campaigning season, something which Labour have been absolutely appalling on. Quite literally, you had Sadiq Khan, the Mayor of London, talking about during the election period how they were going to take Westminster, they were going to take Barnet, they were going to take all of these different areas which have traditionally been strongly Tory areas. And taking them was going to be a very difficult feat. Basically, essentially, they've just been buying into their own bias and their own momentum and their own kind of stories. Those things didn't happen, because Seamus Milne and the comms team and as part of the Labour leadership had let those expectations grow to the point where they reached almost fever pitch. Well, that means that you lost the press war and you lost the media war, because on the day of the results being announced, what everybody heard, and this includes me, was Labour failed to make necessary gains in London. Winning Westminster is not a necessary gain for the Labour Party. Winning Nuneaton is, winning Basildon is, winning Swindon is, and winning the Black Country is. But winning Westminster and Barnet, they're not necessarily things that Labour need to be looking to do. And yet, they let it get to the point where it was viewed as that. So, you know, we can cock up some more evidence that we need to put Seamus Milne into a cannon and fire him off somewhere, because we've got another example of him and his team being a bit naff at their job here.
On the spin war, I think you're right. The Tories won the spin war. It's something that we've talked about on the podcast previously, in that they were saying they were going to lose in Manchester, Birmingham, almost lose across the board. And they've done a very good job at downplaying expectations. The ever-valuable Stephen Bush quoted an anonymous source close to the Labour leadership that said that the Corbyn leadership didn't see any point in trying to engage in an expectations management war because essentially it's always a fight that you lose. And I think in hindsight, well, even without the benefit of hindsight, I think you can say that's quite a daft decision, because if you choose not to take part in a war, then you lose. And what's therefore happened is, it is essentially, as you say, the Conservatives have been allowed to paint this as a very good night. But would you say maybe that, given the scandals over the past month or so, given the fact that we had our fourth cabinet resignation in 6 months, the Sunday before the election, given that we've had the Windrush scandal in the month before, which really has cut through, unlike a lot of the negative stories affecting Labour, which we'll get to later in the podcast, a lot of the negative stories about the government actually have cut through. And yet still, that didn't affect the Conservatives' vote. Does that show that actually they have had a decent night from their point of view?
As I said before, the results of the election were basically, we're exactly where we were a year ago with the general election. The British public basically voted again and said, we still don't know who we back necessarily. Mm-hmm. There's no real one party which we feel confident in moving forward with. So, yes, it is very surprising in a number of ways that, you know, the Tories' vote held up as much as it did. But then let's actually look at the overall figure. So we'll spend a bit more time talking about some of the kind of general election kind of predictions which have come off the back of this in a bit. But the at least one prediction, I think it was the John Curtis one, basically puts both Labour and the Tories at a statistical dead heat, about 35%, I think it was. That's down for both parties compared to the general election. So, you know, if that is the case, and, you know, we're seeing, in theory, the Lib Dems getting about 16%, you know, you can see where the swing has happened there. It's not necessarily gone between Labour and Tory in a lot of areas.
What do you think of the claim by the Brexit ultras, then, that this shows that the Conservatives need to go ahead with that disastrous hard Brexit that they have now?
Mm-hmm. So, there was some top-level analysis which one of the political academics I follow on Twitter was tweeting out as he was basically just doing the analysis. I cannot remember who it was, and I can't find the original tweets, unfortunately. But he was essentially just showing some correlations and between, you know, different areas, the how they voted in the referendum and how they voted in the local elections. Now, for the most part, there was no correlation between what the Lib Dems were getting and how and what Labour were getting in relation to the referendum. But for the Tories, there was a correlation in a positive manner, you know, i.e. when it came to Leave, a supporting area. So more a place supported leaving the EU, the higher up it's the Tory vote went. So there may be some logic to what Jacob Rees-Mogg is saying there, in that Tory supporters are expecting a harder Brexit. The issue, though, is that what Tory supporters want and what you need to actually do to win over waverers so that you can build back up that Tory majority are potentially very different things in this aspect. And again, I think that's what he's looking at. The local election did not send the message that a hard Brexit will win votes. It sent the message a hard Brexit will keep Tory members and Tory voters happy. So it really just boils down to which of those do you want to prioritise if you're the government?
I mean, So Boris Johnson's assertion that the Tories did well in the local elections because of the customs union pledge they've done is blatantly nuts.
Most people probably couldn't even name it or even knew it existed.
I'd probably include in that most Tory MPs. And I think what Theresa May has done is make the calculation that the Conservative, the votes the Tories got at 2015 plus the UKIP vote in 2015 equals a parliamentary majority. And that has informed a lot of her rhetoric and her thinking for the past couple of years, and her policy on Brexit in particular, and rhetoric about citizens of nowhere, all that kind of stuff. And mathematically, she's right. However, politically, obviously last year it didn't work. What we do see, and what we have seen, is that where the UKIP vote is collapsing, it has gone to the Conservatives. So in the podcast we recorded earlier this week, looking at when we talked about areas to keep an eye on. Now, we all know, listeners, because of that episode, you were spending a lot of time refreshing the BBC election coverage and the Guardian election coverage, trying to find out what were the results in Dudley. And spoiler alert, UKIP lost 7 of their council seats and the Conservative gained all 7. And that's just, again, one example of how that UKIP vote is switching to the Tories. And therefore, in terms of an electoral calculation, I can see it makes sense. The only problem I think the Conservatives have is that if they actually go through with the Brexit policies that they are enacting, they will be disastrous and cause them in the long run to lose catastrophic amounts of support. But I'm not sure they really care about that much at the moment anyway. So that's the Conservatives talking about the collapse of the UKIP vote, and in places like Dudley, I think actually leads us quite nicely on to Labour and what Labour is saying about the results. Now, as usual with Labour now, there's a kind of, there's two different tribes in this cold war that Labour's had since the second leadership election, in which Corbyn beat our old friend Bantasaurus Rex, Owen Smith. And what are the two different strands of thinking that we're seeing now?
So you have one strand of thinking which I think was best summed up actually by Aaron Bastani on Twitter, where he basically said, the results of this local election totally vindicate the Labour leadership and their strategy, which is nonsense of the highest order. And we'll talk about that as to why in a bit. And then you've got the other strand of thinking, which is, this is a disaster. You know, we've not made any progress. We've not made, you know, we're going on to lose the next election based on these results, which equally is nonsense, because these results don't really tell us anything other than we are where we were a year ago at the general election, which, you know, makes it kind of difficult if you're trying to actually participate in this spinning war amongst Labour members to actually kind of make any solid points. Because from a Labour perspective, this election it's basically pick your evidence and you can make your case. You want to be pessimistic and think that Labour's going to lose the next general election under Jeremy Corbyn. Well, you've got some evidence for that. You can look to the Black Country, where things have been not going well. The failure to pick up councils such as Westminster and Barnet. Barnet in particular, you can point to as the fact that Jewish communities, and it wasn't just in London, across Britain, swung heavily against Labour.
I wonder why that would be, Steve. Has there been anything recently?
I think there might be some allegations of anti-Semitism which are hanging over Jeremy Corbyn's head. But, you know, that wouldn't have an impact on, you know, actual votes for the party. And I should just say, we should be dealing with that not because of tactical reasons or for voting political reasons, but because it's the right thing to do. So get off your arse, Jeremy, please.
Can we expel Ken Livingstone? Please.
But on the other side of things, if you are more optimistic and you want to make the case for everything's going absolutely peachy, you can find evidence for that as well. So in London, whilst places like Barnet were not won, progress was made in Westminster, progress was made in Wandsworth, all of these places which traditionally Labour has not necessarily struggled in, but never been able to get much further in because of the stranglehold that the Tories have. Well, guess what? Progress was made, and it's in a position where next time, actually, flipping them may be possible.
I suppose, yeah, we have talked about Owen Jones and the unseat campaigns he has been leading.
Mm-hmm.
And in a similar way to any target seat that Theresa May visited during the general election didn't actually switch Tory. None of the areas that Owen Jones led unseat campaigning events in, like Westminster, like Wandsworth, they didn't go to Labour either. There's a few people who've been engaging in a mixing up correlation and causation here. I mean, what are your thoughts on the effectiveness of those campaigns?
I think there's actually two different kind of unseat campaigns which have happened. You've had the stuff for the local elections, which hasn't really worked, and worked based on the results we've seen. And then we've also got the kind of what has been the core, actually, of Owen Jones's unseat campaigns, which has been targeting specific seats of politically vulnerable Tories, like Anna Sowry, Boris Johnson, Ian Duncan Smith, and all of those sorts of high-profile Tories, which people are quite eager to kick out. On those ones, no idea how that's going, because we haven't had local elections in those areas. Nobody's been campaigning. Whilst there's been events in there, general elections not for 4 years, really.
I think I'm right in saying, or rather, I saw it on Twitter, so it must be true, that in Uxbridge, there'd been a bigger swing to the Conservatives than Labour in a lot of the areas that Boris Johnson has his seat. So what that tells us, I'm not quite sure.
Yeah, God only knows at the moment. But what you do, that stuff is still worthwhile doing. You're not going to unseat everybody necessarily, but it's still a good focal point and it's still a good idea. The problem was more with the local elections, were the areas that Owen Jones and Momentum were heading off to. It was all London. It was all, we're going to take Kensington, we're going to take Wandsworth, we're going to take Barnet. Taking Barnet, okay, fair enough. Actually, that was a reasonable target. It's just the anti-Semitism issue hangs over, and the area with the high Jewish population basically went, nah, go away. So what actually happened then was they were sent to places where they weren't necessarily needed. People were going to places which, I'm sure it made them feel good. I'm sure it managed to get people revved up. But then that didn't translate into anything necessarily meaningful, at least not in terms of narrative for now, and definitely not in terms of making progress at the next general election. Because what we really needed to do, if you were doing this properly, is you have a couple of those high-profile events early on in the campaign, so you can then get people revved up, and then you send them off to Nuneaton, you send them off to Swindon, you send them off to Basildon, you send them off to Birmingham and Walsall and the Black Country, because those are the places you need to win, and those are the places where there are seats which are going to be vulnerable to the Tory attacks. So all in all, Owen Jones's campaign for the local elections did not go well, and ultimately I think that's just down to because he and an awful lot of the Momentum leadership, this is not Momentum as a whole, this is very much the leadership and the people who are active in London, are very London-centric, and they have forgotten that London is not the rest of the country. And I think they need to basically get off their arses and get out into the rest of the nation to actually stand a chance at making more of an impact.
Yes, we saw Labour do well in some areas. So, for instance, Trafford is another area we mentioned
mm-hmm.
on Monday's show.
I was going to say, Trafford is actually quite an interesting one. Again, it's being hailed as a victory for Labour because they are now in control of the council. But there was one thing that I stumbled across on Twitter, which was Jennifer Williams. And
from Manchester Evening News is very good.
Yeah, she's very good and well worth following. But she pointed out that actually the thing that put Trafford into Labour hands rather than no overall control or potentially even still a Tory hold, was the fact that the Greens won a couple of seats.
Mm-hmm.
So actually, Labour's progress there, again, it was still progress, but it may not have been good enough on its own. It was only the fact that the Greens did well, which generated this result, which is being used to bolster the Corbynite narrative.
Yes, but in Trafford, the Tories lost 5 seats, Lib Dems lost 1, Labour gained 4, the Greens gained 2.
Yeah.
So in Birmingham, where we are, it's essentially even Stevens. I think Labour had about two-thirds of the seats under the old boundaries. They've got two-thirds of the seats now under new boundaries. Again, getting wards like... In this constituency, Selly Oak, it's a bit of a microcosm of the national picture. We're gaining places like Bourneville, which are more Remainy areas.
Much more kind of liberal, middle class, university graduate areas.
And losing seats like Hyters Heath and Druids Heath. Druids Heath to the Greens, interestingly. Mm-hmm. Julian Pritchard, who was the Green candidate in Selly Oak last year, ran a very actively targeted campaign, and didn't do that well in the area, in traditionally white working class areas that were more leave, and you can see that picture across the country. So we mentioned Dudley, you've mentioned Nuneaton. Quick shout out to Derby, and especially Derby North, because everyone's favourite Labour MP Chris Williamson, in his patch the Tories did particularly well, and the Tories in Derby overall, they gained 3 seats and Labour lost 3, which I'm sure is completely unrelated to the fact that Chris Williamson has spent the last 6 weeks on Russia Today spouting Kremlin propaganda.
Yeah, and ultimately, this is a seat, this is a council which Chris Williams used to run, and it's now gone from Labour control to, I believe, no overall control. Hmm. And I would wager next time it comes up, it's probably going to go Tory. At least if Chris Williams continues on his quest to basically alienate anybody sensible in British politics.
One of the things that we mentioned before we started recording this is that it can be quite hard to project general election results onto local election results. So, for instance, the Sky News general election predictor has Labour 261, which I think is basically what they got last year. The Tories down 12, Lib Dems up 12 to 26. SNP staying where they are as well. Now, it's kind of hard to know how accurate those predictions are, because in Yardley, the Lib Dems did particularly well, but I don't know if anyone's saying that Jess Phillips is in danger. You said in South Cambridgeshire, which is Heidi Allen's seat, I don't think anyone is saying that Heidi Allen's particularly in danger. So it could just be that we're being unfair on Chris Williamson by saying that he might be in danger because Labour did particularly badly in Derby North. However, the time where we needed to be fair to Chris Williamson has probably passed, and probably passed a long time ago.
Yeah, and it would be lying if there wasn't a certain amount of schadenfreude on our part for watching Chris Williamson's seat and potentially be in a little bit of trouble.
So again, with Labour, the problem is that they, as we said before, they didn't really engage in the spinning war and therefore lost it. And 4 years ago, local election results under Ed Miliband, as we've said, were always all right, but not quite good enough to get a majority. Again, Labour did about the same as it did 4 years ago. So again, it's not looking like they are on track to get a majority. Not that the Conservatives are either. As you say, it's very much two sides locked in a bit of a struggle here. One takeaway from, I've seen people like Jonathan Friedland make, and I'm pretty sure Alistair Campbell said something similar, is about whether or not Labour now needs to change its position on Brexit to be more Remainy, which is an interesting takeaway based on last night's result, given that Labour were doing quite badly in areas that voted Leave. I'm not quite sure if a way to appeal to those people is to go ultra-Remain, people's vote, second referendum. It feels like they're the mirror image of Jacob Rees-Mogg and Duncan Smith. They're saying that Labour's position on Brexit should be what they think it should be, rather than thinking about how to win politically.
Yeah, ultimately, the sorts of people that you're, rather, the sorts of votes that you're going to be winning from kind of becoming a much more staunchly Remain party for Labour is going to be Lib Dem votes. Now, it actually, in a number of ways, that's counterintuitive to what you want to achieve, because the difference probably between Labour getting into government as a minority, in all likelihood, is going to be Lib Dem MPs beating incumbent Tories. Because as long as those Tory MPs hold those former Lib Dem seats, you know, it's going to be very difficult to get Labour over the line to be bigger than the Conservatives.
Let's go on to the Lib Dems, because In many ways, the Lib Dems were probably the party that felt happiest and a genuine reason to feel happiest after these results. So, again, we talked about them on Monday and we said that essentially to have any hope of remaining a viable party, they had to win the Watford mayoralty, which they did.
Yeah.
And as well as that, they took Richmond Council,
yeah,
they took Kingston Council and South Cambridgeshire as well. So... although I think nationwide it was more of a struggle, actually the Lib Dems are proving that there is life in the old dog yet.
Yeah, what you can see as you kind of delve into an awful lot of the results for the Lib Dems is that in the areas where they were once strong but then took a basting, they seem to be on the bounce back again. Now, this does mean it's not a national resurgence, but then, to be quite honest, the Lib Dems were never in a lot of ways a national party. They may have constantly been, polling at 20% in a lot of different seats in a lot of different areas, but they were never actually getting stood a chance of winning a lot of those areas. So what we're seeing is basically almost a reverse to back to where they were previously. Areas like Southport, they've made gains. There are some striking changes, as we've said in South Cambridgeshire, where they took a something like a 10 to 15, 20 seat majority from the Tories and turned it into a Lib Dem control. In Sunderland, an area which voted Leave, there were some absolutely striking swings with some Lib Dems winning 54% of the vote in some areas.
But indeed, and it's interesting because I think it was Sunderland or it might have been Newcastle, but a Lib Dem candidate won in a by-election and you assumed it might be a one-off, but actually it still happens in these local elections too. And in Liverpool, the Lib Dems gained 3 seats from Labour. So it's interesting... There are little pockets.
Yeah, and even in areas where, the progress has still been quite slow, Manchester stands out again as an area where, for ages it was just a one-party state. There was only Labour on the council. Then John Leach, the former MP for Manchester Withington, wins a council seat and is the only opposition councillor. He is now joined by another Lib Dem councillor. So, slowly... in Manchester, it appears like the Lib Dems are starting to make a bit more progress as well. So, all in all, the Lib Dems actually have had quite a good night. There's nothing actually bad, really, to say. It's about as good as can be expected of them. It's just remains to be seen if they can actually turn that into any meaningful, gains further down the line. It certainly gets them back into the political conversation, but the problem is... turning local elections into general election victories is very difficult. And ultimately, that's what they need to do.
And if the Lib Dems keep on doubling the amount of councillors they have in Manchester every election, I calculate that in 16 years, that Manchester will be a Lib Dem council.
Mm.
So watch this space. The countdown starts here. And Vince Cable, this is the version of Vince Cable, who is... contrite expectation managing after the election version of Vince Cable, which I believe is a new Vince Cable. We haven't seen this iteration yet.
Oh, I've lost track of how many iterations we have seen, but...
Maybe it's like there are an infinite amount... Like parallel universes, there are an infinite amount of Vince Cables.
So Vince Cables all the way down.
Maybe that's true. But Vince Cable said that Rome wasn't built in a day, which is true. Both historically true, but also I think illustrates quite well the Lib Dems' position at the moment as well, I think.
Yeah.
That's all for this week. And hopefully, now that there is no election, hopefully until 2022, I can't even make words anymore. That's how bad it is. Hopefully, it means we can write a Friday Fizz on Friday and we can sum up the week's news that in a way that isn't just me sobbing. So that will be on our website, notenoughchampagne.com. Our Facebook page is facebook.com/notenoughchampagne. James Cram designed our logo, and you can follow him on Twitter @JamesCram. And Dave Deppert is responsible for our theme tune, Plucky Good Times. My Twitter handle is PepAboutWriter, and Steve has rendered all of our previous episodes redundant and inaccurate by changing his Twitter handle to
Acoustic Radical.
Happy plotting, everyone.